You've just joined the Prepper Broadcasting Network, where we promote self-reliance and independence. The views and opinions expressed are strictly those of the host or their guests. Visit us in the interactive chat room at PrepperBroadcasting.com.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Next Generation Show. Sorry for the slight hang-up there. We had a little bit of technical difficulties, but it was entirely my fault. So, anyways, welcome to the Next Generation Show, where we delve deeper into the little things in life. Here we explore the lost art of fatherhood, parenthood, and fundamental preparedness for the world today. I'm your host, Ryan Buford, along with my co-host, Young Master Colin, and today we're broadcasting from the heart of the Pacific Northwest. We appreciate you joining us today, and there's not a moment to lose, so let's get right in. First off, a couple of announcements. For those of you listening to us on Blog Talk Radio, we ask that you switch over to PrepperBroadcasting.com and open up maybe a separate tab or separate page where you can join in on the live chat. It looks like we've got a couple folks in the chat room at the moment, and I'm in there along with Colin, and we encourage you to join us with these like-minded listeners. It's always a good time, good conversation, and don't forget, you can call in live to listen to the show at 347-202-0228, and then press 1 if you'd like to listen to us live on air. All ages welcome, just keep it PG for our listening audience. Couple announcements off the bat. I mentioned last week, we're looking into improving the listener experience for those of you out there in more ways than one here at Prepper Broadcasting. And in doing so, we're going to be exploring some avenues for better sound quality and more reliable platforms. Some of you may have noticed that there's a brand new Prepper Broadcasting website. And if you haven't, go check it out. It's totally different. And you can sign up for the newsletter just like before, join the chat room, check out new shows, and stay tuned for some of the updates on the audio experiences in the next days and weeks to come over some of the other shows. Also, you may have heard that we've teamed up with Ron Foster and Prepper.org to bring you some added content on the side. So don't forget to tap into this great resource when you get the chance. If you've missed the announcement last week, I just thought I'd bring it up again. That here at the Next Generation, we're putting together a collection of all of the weekly projects that we've done so far and through the end of the year into one concise book. It'll be available in electronic and hopefully hard copy form. And for those of you interested, stay tuned in some of the upcoming weeks and months for the details. If you'd like to contribute or help with the book in any way, whether it be marketing or design, layout, content, anything like that, if you're interested, get a hold of us. And if you'd like to get a hold of us, if you'd like to send us some of your feedback on the shows, comments, show ideas, you can reach out to us anytime you want. That's right, you can reach us at Prepper Broadcasting on the Next Generation show page. We also have a Facebook page, Twitter, and of course you can reach me directly at PrepperDad@mail.com. We've got Instagram accounts where we post photos of these products for those of you who, it's always hard to see in your mind's eye what these projects entail until you get a good picture in front of you. So hopefully, if you're interested, check us out, join us, befriend us, I guess you could say, and we'll go from there. So today, we're going to be talking about the importance of making a dry run. And this particular show, the winter edition of the dry run camping session that we did back in June.
It's also the first of 2019.
It is the first episode of 2019. So welcome everybody to 2019. I've already forgotten to tell a couple of folks Happy New Year's out there. So Happy New Year's to everyone out there listening. Hopefully you've got some great plans coming coming ahead or moving forward into 2019. I know we do here, and hopefully you guys can share some of what you've got going on your front as well as what we've got going on here. But anyways, so today's topic is the importance of making a dry run in the wintertime. And back in June, we did a dry run camping session, and we got all of our camping gear out, and we thought we'd revisit this now that the weather has changed. The environment is the same, but the conditions are completely different. So we wanted to test this out in a controlled environment. One of the reasons why I wanted to tackle this topic was something that actually happened several years ago. Excuse me. When I was, that's when my brother was out of basic training. He was in between and he was on his way to officer candidacy school for the Marines. And he had very few chances to talk to us back home. And he called up and we talked a little bit about some of the things that he was experiencing and, you know, some of the oddities of the folks that he was with and his bunk mates. And his platoon and his group of guys that he was palling around and going through the muck. And one of the things that he brought up was cold weather camping. And, you know, we were joking back and forth about, you know, hey, yeah, do you remember when mom and dad took us up, you know, and we do winter camping or when we would go out and do some camping. And, we were talking a little bit back and forth. He's like, you know, a lot of these guys had a heck of a time staying warm. And it's almost like they never went camping or something. And one of the things that struck me about that was odd is that, yeah, you know, there's probably a lot of folks out there who haven't taken the time to go out on a winter camp and really, you know, or even a high mountain camp in early spring or late summer. To experience that brisk cold weather that happens overnight. Sometimes even desert camping in the summertime can be some drastic change. There can be some drastic changes to the weather and temperature. Well, one of the things that he mentioned was that, you know, hey, do you remember when we would go camping and mom would tell us what you needed to do is strip down to your skibbies and make sure that you take all of your clothes off before you get in your sleeping bag, and that will keep you warm. And it was hard as a kid, I remember, I think we were probably 7 or 8 years old, to trust in that because it's completely opposite of what you would expect to keep you warm. I mean, all of the clothing and the layers that you put on to be outside is it's important. You know, it makes a difference on whether or not you're able to, stay warm. But when you're in a camping environment, it's a little bit different. You have to be able to, look, sounds like I've got some audio issues in chat. So give me just a second. I'm going to switch my mic over. Hopefully that's a little bit better. Maybe folks give us some heads up in the chat room if that's better or not. But anyway, one of the things that caught off guard was the fact that this knowledge wasn't exactly practical, and there's a lot of people out there who probably didn't have that kind of exposure. And at the time, I was talking to my brother. Colin was much younger, a much younger grasshopper, and as much as I wanted to go camping, I had grown comfortable with apartment living and living week to week, paycheck to paycheck. Plus, you know, friends or extended family provided access to all the fun toys, like, you know, your campers or four-wheelers or boats or whatever it might be. And all those things had completely different engineering controls and environments than your basic tent camping. So why would I want to bother with a tent when a hotel would do? Or, you know, like that. Well, I'm not sure. I'm sure that most of you can guess why camping is an important part of prepping. With the hits our nation has endured over the last 6 months on the national disaster front, thousands have been displaced against their will. Let me see if I can adjust this mic a little bit. Sorry, folks. Please bear with me. Again, one of the reasons that we're going to be switching over to a better audio system here in the future. But anyways, like I was saying, with all the disasters that are happening, there's a lot of people that have been displaced. And as preppers, there's this fantasy out there of bugging out. Unfortunately, it's rarely captured well enough by articles or prepper fiction or even movies when it comes to the reality of these scenarios. Until you get out there to test your own tolerances or test your own gear and test your own willpower, your claims to survival may fall short source to the task. And like these guys in, these guys in basic training, if they come from the inner cities and they don't never had any exposure to that, it can be pretty significant. So on today's show, Colin and I are sharing with you, the listeners out there, our firsthand experiences with a single overnight dry run camping trip from this week that we experienced outside in our own yard, in hopes that you can learn from our successes and our failures. But first, before we set up camp, Colin, can you share your fun fact of the week?
Yo, 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 fellow listeners. I'm the co-host of the Next Generation Show, Colin Buford, speaking with my father and the host of the show, Ryan. And today, we're talking about our experience with our first winter dry run, which is also our first dry run of 2019. So how about that? But before we get too far into that, I'd like to quickly cover the Craftcon Fun Fact of the Week. For those of you who aren't aware of the Craftcon Fun Fact of the Week, it's a segment on our show that gives a fun tidbit of information of something that's... Let's get right into it. Today's Craftcon Fun Fact of the Week is... The ancient Romans were the first to construct distinct left and right shoes. Before that, shoes could be worn on either foot. I despise ancient Romans for this.
Oh, no.
Because I would like to carelessly pick my shoes and throw them on my feet like I do my socks. But because of ancient Romans, I can't do that.
Oh.
Unless you're like one of those people who have a fancy sports sock and have left and right socks.
Oh, yeah.
Push the pretty extra.
Kind of an interesting fact. I realize that makes sense. Actually,
yeah, but why?
Both feet. That's a little bit odd. So, anyways, well, great. Thanks, buddy. That was a good one. Appreciate that. So, on with the show. Gosh, everybody's getting. Sounds like we got a lot of choppy audio. I'm not entirely sure why that's happening. So, I might see if we can change our audio settings. In the meantime, and I'll try and do that at break. In the meantime, I'm going to try and talk a little bit slower instead, and maybe there's some audio things that we can do to make changes in mid-stride. So hopefully we'll be able to get to even keel for you folks out there. For those of you who caught our early show this summer, you would have been part of the experience that we had with a single overnight summer camping session in our yard. It actually proved to be a strong learning experience and exposed several holes in our planning, our gear, and our preparations. Now here we are 6 months later, and we're facing temperatures that are 50 to 60 degrees colder. There's snow on the ground, and in our case this week, there were wind gusts upwards of 20 or 30 miles an hour. And for those of you who are in the chat room, I'll drop in the, most of the folks in the chat room, I'll drop a link in the chat. For those of you listening, you can access the archive on our show page. But before we get started, there's a quick, you know, naysayer's warning. I understand that I'm no Bear Grylls and survival champion, so and I'm no Navy SEAL or ex-commando, and I wasn't trained trained by the best survival gurus in the nation. I'm just a normal guy, and, you know, all in all, that's not the point of today's show. This is the second in a extended series that's focusing on seasonal preparedness for camping out and doing this to make sure that your gear is adequate and that your skills are sufficient. So if anyone out there is interested or has, you know, the expertise or would to chime in, feel free to send us your comments and suggestions, but keep in mind that it's just a learning experience. And it actually has been a pretty good learning experience all in all. So back in June, the main takeaways from this original dry run were that we had a lack of power that kept our devices at bay. There was also a lack of sanitation that was a challenge for keeping our dishes clean, and we realized how much waste we created. We also exposed a critical failure on tent quality, because some of the tents that we had stashed away hadn't been used in years.
And buttering our pans.
And they would have been buttering what?
And buttering our pans.
The tents? Oh, yeah. Yeah, buttering the pans was an issue. Some of the tent issues that we had had... Calling in. Yeah, I might have to call in, see if I can do that. Yeah, some of the tent issues that we had were that they were too small or no longer suitable for the space we needed. We packed away too much of the gear that was able to transport easily, and like Colin was saying, the whole food issue tended to be a problem. So let's see if we can call in briefly, or maybe we'll try the Skype call in instead. I'm going to switch to a break. I'm going to take a quick one. And when we get back, hopefully we'll be able to have a better sound quality for you folks out there. And I do apologize for the hang-ups. So hang on just 1 second, and I'll be right back.
As Prepper Broadcasting listeners, you already know that the more self-reliant people we have around, the better off we'll be in a disaster. That's why we started Prepper.org. The mission? Bring top survival, prepping, and homesteading experts under one roof to share their knowledge with as many Americans as possible. I want you to go to prepper.org/PBN. We've got a free survival basics guide for you by the one and only Ron Foster. That's prepper.org/PBN. Prepper.org/PBN.
When disaster strikes and your GPS is useless, ancient navigation techniques will ensure your survival. New from Ulysses Press, Prepper's Survival Navigation. With this guide, you can easily travel through even the farthest, remotest places, utilizing tips from the United States Army and lifelong wilderness experts. You'll learn life-saving navigation techniques, including how to orient yourself using a topographical map, find north using a compass, shadows, and stars, calculate distance using landmarks and pace count, navigate unfamiliar terrain using dead reckoning, travel in low visibility, use landscape features to pinpoint location. This definitive guide to terrain navigation also teaches you essential survival skills like firecraft, water procurement, and shelter making. Prepper's Survival Navigation is essential to have on hand during any outdoor adventure, including the weekend family outing. On sale now. Find Prepper's Survival Navigation on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Prepper Broadcasting, or wherever fine books are sold.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully that's a little bit better. I got an echo here, so give me just one second. Hopefully that's any better. Quick chime in from chat room. Can you hear me all right? Hopefully we're all right. So I'm going to go ahead and continue talking. If anybody has any issues, please let me know in the chat room. Some of the things that... before we went to break, we talked about some of the main takeaways back in June. Well, now, here in January, we made some changes. Colin was able to get his hands on a new tent, and he couldn't wait to get it out, so of course we had to give it a shot. We also spent some money ahead of time on some new gear that we figured we would probably need to withstand some of the issues that we were going to have, like even less daylight than before, or cold temperatures, things like that. We incorporated some other fun tools and gadgets as well, like the survival stoveboard stoves that we had an opportunity to test out earlier in the year. And we were able to give these a good trial run during this wintertime dry run. So obviously, we knew going into this that we were going to have some new challenges. You know, obviously the number one challenge is going to be cold weather, right? So mid-June around here, when we did the first dry run, it was probably in the upper 80s easily, and now we're about 50 to 60 degrees colder. So the first thing we had to do was go through and, you know, assess the next challenge, which was, you know, is our gear adequate? So we went through and found a couple of holes, things that we needed to change, and we updated what we could. Some of the things that we had some pitfalls before were some of the daylight and evening light considerations, because instead of getting dark at 8 or 9 o'clock at night, we'd be facing the darkness about 3 or 4 in the afternoon, which means that we would need our lights to last much longer, and more than likely we were going to have more time spent working around in the dark. So that was a consideration that we had to take into place. But one of the other things that we didn't anticipate for was high winds. And those high winds really set some challenges for us that we weren't quite prepared for. We'll get into that a little bit later in the show when we get to some of the things that, you know, the stages of camp out. There was one thing that came across social media when I started posting about how this experience was going for us. And there was a guy who commented on one of my social media posts. A guy, I want to say his tag is Brexit Survival on Twitter. So I'm guessing he's somewhere in the UK. So hopefully he doesn't mind me shouting out this comment. But I really thought it was important to reiterate some of this particular point that he made. And he said that camping in hard weather is exhausting and really increases one's need for calorie intake, which ironically is exactly what you don't need if you're in a survival situation. So all in all, the point in this is that meeting the need for calorie consumption and warmth were paramount in our cold winter survival. So some of the things that, and this actually proved very true, and we had to make some changes on the fly to just get through the night. I wanted to make a couple of quick points. A word on tents. So we found right off the bat that the selection of the tent has to meet the need of the environment that you live in, including the weather, temperatures, and moisture levels. Don't go cheap if you can afford it. I'm going to drop a link in the chat room for those of you in there, and this is from switchbacktravel.com. It was a review for 2018 best tents. And one thing that I'd like to note about this is this particular posting, I went to this because it has the best four-season tents. And that makes a difference, especially when it comes to your environment where you are. Now, down in the lower states of the United States, obviously, you might have two or maybe three seasons. Here up north, we've got a solid fourth season, which makes temperatures a major factor in wintertime, and it eliminates the ability for you to use a typical two or three season tent, or two or three season tent during the wintertime. Now you can do it, but it's uncomfortable, and that's one of the challenges that we ran into. Now these tents range anywhere from $400 to $1,000, and they're they're meant for sub-zero temperatures and high winds, which is something that we ran into, but we weren't quite prepared for. We made up for it in other ways, but it was still pretty cold out. Secondly, I wanted to talk, just give a quick word on sleeping bags. So some of you out there might be able to go to the local big box store and find yourself a sleeping bag. You'll find something that's, you know, decently priced, maybe on sale, but one thing to pay attention to is that sleeping bags have temperature ratings. The weather here can drop to below freezing for days or even weeks at a time. And my bag, I believe, is rated for 35 degrees. Colin's bag was rated for 30 degrees. and the temperature was about 34 degrees during the evening, but with the high winds, it drove temperatures down to the upper to mid-20s. So I'm also going to drop this link into the chat room, and for anybody out there who's interested in this information, feel free to get a hold of me afterward. But this link is from the Outdoor Authority, and it's the best cold weather sleeping bags as reviewed in 2018. And some of these bags are pretty amazing. Not many prices listed on them, but they're exceptional in their weight and their ability to withstand cold temperatures. So if you can't afford a $600 or $700 tent, you can potentially make up for it by making sure you have a good quality sleeping bag. The only thing to keep in mind, these tents and these sleeping bags are not going to be available at your typical big box store. You're not going to find them at Target or Walmart or Shopko, Kmart, none of these places. 90% of the stuff out there, and I'm just throwing that percentage out there, but 90% of the stuff out there is going to be rated for summertime camping and 2 to 3 season tent type scenarios. When you get into winter conditions, much of this equipment is not going to work for you, so you need to keep that in mind. Let's get into the experiences that we have shared for the first, well, I guess for the night. We're going to take you through not even a 24-hour period. It might have been a 12-hour period, right? Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
So honestly, because it turns out that I'm a much bigger sissy than I thought. I figured a 24-hour period outside would be a piece of cake, but when you take into account the weather and the winds, which, by the way, never stopped. It wasn't just gusts of wind. It was full-on 30-mile-an-hour winds on occasion. You know, at least 17 rated by the nearby airport. But first step, the step that made it all happen was fire. So, Colin, do you want to maybe share with us what happened when we went to go start a fire and how we had to make it work?
Yeah, so at first we started by maybe getting out there early, about 9:30 or 10, I think it was, to just start a fire in the fire pit. But it was way too windy for even a plasma lighter to work. It's not that it didn't work entirely like a regular flame lighter would or wouldn't, but it was just too cold and nothing would light. So then we moved on to try to use our survival stoveworks, use some of the coals from that, but the smokestack kept like backdrafting air, and we couldn't even get it to light in there. So overall, we needed to bring up our winter fire starting.
Yeah, one of the things that happened is after about 30 minutes of Colin freezing outside, trying to get a fire going, he came inside and asked if we could cheat. And I, of course, you know, I'm thinking, oh, geez, here we go. We're already having problems. You know, it's going to be a lot more difficult than I thought until I realized how bad the wind conditions actually were. It was so bad, you know, you could flick a lighter, even a big lighter, and you'd get spark, but the flame would be gone before it even had a chance to ignite anything. So what we had to do is actually come back inside, warm up a little bit, and go back to the drawing board. What we wound up doing is creating a small Sterno can stove out of some aluminum cans, some cotton balls, and aftershave, electric shave. We found the most flammable, easily accessible material that we had on hand, and the only way we were able to do that was to light it inside the house, and then rush outside, get it into the fire pit, and cover it with sticks. So definitely lesson learned when it comes to being able to start a fire and in different types of weather, not just wet weather, not just cold weather, but I was really surprised at how much of an impact the wind had on our ability to even create a small fire, even get coals going. So first step was a little bit of a failure, but we were able to get it going. And that, I mean, it really set the tone for the whole trip because we wound up going back and forth on whether or not, because there's no way we'd be able to pack it without at least a fire to keep us warm, while we were cooking meals or doing whatever. It wasn't going to happen. One thing having a controlled environment like this is we were able to tap out at any moment to go inside and get warm. We wanted to try and avoid that as much as we could, but you know, it's something that that took quite a bit of willpower. And the defining factor for that willpower was our ability to create a fire for warmth. So the second step, once we finally got a fire going, we lit it up as hot as we could, got some good logs on there to actually put out some serious heat. And the next step was setting up camp. Well, as you can imagine, setting up camp proved to be a little bit of a challenge because then it was windy. So, you know, we had to kind of position our tents in a way that would block some of the wind and yet, you know, still be able to set up the tents with all this wind. And for any of you who have had to do this in the past, it's like, I don't know, how would you describe that? I mean, it's like if you're trying to put a shirt on while you're standing up in the back of a pickup truck or something like that. It's just you're sitting there fighting the fabric against the wind and holding, you know, doing what you can to just hold on to a piece of the fabric. So it took us a little bit longer than usual to set up tents. Even though they were, you know, quick set up tents, they still took probably 20 or 30 minutes just to set them up because we had to anchor every single point.
Now that I think about it, when you like, you know, Avatar, like the elements
Yes.
Like the airbender and the waterbender and the firebender and all that, I think people overlook the airbender.
Yeah.
By a lot.
And it's really, you know, a lot of people talk about being able to survive cold temperatures, but the wind here in this particular scenario, now it's calm out here. You know, I'm looking out the window and there's not even a lick of wind outside, but you know, you wouldn't have been able to tell the difference. I mean, it's night and day really compared to the way it was before. So we finally get the camp set up, and of course we had to rush to do this before nightfall. And so we get camp set up, and you know, now here we are. We've got a little bit of daylight left, and we figure, well, we may as well get something to eat because here we're into early afternoon. We've missed lunch because we've been busy trying to get a fire going and setting up camp. So now it's time to get some food. Well, I mean, what kind of, can you kind of describe what happened when we went to start cooking food? I mean, do you remember?
Well, I mean, we just threw some, for lunch?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we just threw some brats on a stick.
Yeah. Being able to use the fire pit to cook food, which was helpful, but it wasn't exactly the healthiest meal. And as we were kind of collecting our things and going through, you know, some of the stuff that we needed to do, you know, just to get through the night, like getting our sleeping bag set up and the stuff inside the tent, it was getting darker and darker. After we had a little bit of a snack in the afternoon, you know, evening rolls around, and at this point, I'm ready to eat again. So we go to try and light up the survival stove, and I'm bringing out some of our camp gear, like our mess kits and things like that. And we start realizing that the wind is wreaking havoc on our ability to start even small fires in a controlled environment like a camp stove. So what we wound up doing is taking coals out of the fire and putting them inside the camp stove just so that we could get some sort of flame under there. Once we were able to do that, we were able to at least get some water boiling and, you know, at least get a warm drink on, like a, you know, I think I had a decaf coffee and you might have had a tea or hot chocolate or something like that. And that made a pretty big difference. I mean, just as far as being able to have a, what do you call it, like a mood enhancer or an attitude changer. And it kind of brought in this other element of being able to have some degree of comfort in warm meals. So fast forward a couple of hours, and, you know, I'm getting hungry, and we can't get enough heat to cook anything on the camp stove because the wind keeps taking out our fire. It's blowing back through the backside of it.
Oh, yeah, but even when we had a flame, it would cool the camp stove itself down.
Right. The wind was blowing so much that there would be heat on the plate, but the media, the pots or whatever we were putting on top of it were cooling because of the wind. And like I said, it's almost like trying to heat. If you were to take a lighter or sterno can and hold it onto the bottom of a can of chili or something and then drive 20 miles down the road, 20 miles an hour down the road, and, you would never get any heat out of it. Maybe a little bit at the bottom, but it would never heat all the way through because the air would constantly be cooling it off and it would never be able to catch up. That's exactly what's happened. So we wound up going to our backup, which was MREs, yep. So a couple of things that we decided to pack this time around were a couple of MREs that I had stashed away, and they were actually kind of an interesting experience. It was the first time Colin had ever had an MRE.
They were bad.
Yeah, what did you think of it? Can you explain the process and maybe how it worked?
Yeah, so it just came in this package, and inside the package there's a lot more sides and stuff than I thought, because sometimes when you get those the dry foods, the freeze-dried foods or whatever, it's just like one meal, like hot cereal or something like that. But there's a bunch of sides and stuff that came with it. Basically, you just, there's this bag with a hot pack in it. You just put your MRE packs inside of the bag and then put water in it to let it sit, and then it cooks or heats up your food.
Mm-hmm.
So like Dad said, it was my first time I had an MRE, and it wasn't bad.
Yeah. Well, even that had some challenges to it. Do you remember what happened?
Yeah. So my hot pack didn't end up heating up. I don't know if that's very common for the hot packs not to work, but we tried flipping it over, adding more and less water, but it just didn't end up heating up till. It only warmed up a little bit after we moved my MREs into Dad's bag with hot packs and cooked it there.
Yeah. So essentially we had two MREs and only one of the heating elements worked in it. So we wound up using one heating element to do what we could to at least heat those meals up a little bit. And, it worked. They're a little different. But given the circumstances, without that, we would have probably been having a dinner that was made up of granola bars and Pop-Tarts because there's no way we would have been able to get any sort of hot meals cooked. One of the other challenges that we faced was when it came to that was whenever we were boiling water, there was so much ash from the fire that it was getting into our water.
Yeah, the wind was just kicking up all the ash.
Yeah. So we couldn't really put anything, any open containers into the fire pit like you would normally think, because it would just be filled with ash. There'd be a coating on top of it. So, again, the wind kind of foiled our dinner plans, too, but we wound up just pretty much huddled up in my tent eating MREs and kind of experimenting with that. So definitely a lesson learned when it came to that. One, having a backup to your food plan, and two, understanding that in some instances you may not be able to cook a meal, so especially even if it's cold. And that's probably one of the biggest mood enhancers when it comes to having, to being exposed to cold at some sort of, warm meal, warm drink, something. So the fourth step was, so we get something to eat, and then here we are, it's nightfall. It's all you can do to stand outside and endure the rain just to stand by the fire. And so we just eventually called it quits for trying to play the camping game, and now it was stage four where we had to survive the night. So tents are set up, bags are laid out. We think we've got decent gear, and one of the things that we each wound up getting for this event was something called a bivouac, which is like a Mylar blanket sleeping bag that rolls up to about the size of a racquetball, and it's designed to keep a significant amount of body heat in. I pretty much told Colin the same thing that my mom told me as a kid, strip down, get in your sleeping bag, that's how you'll stay the warmest, and then if you get cold, get into that bivy. So do you want to kind of describe how that experience went?
Yeah, so it didn't take long for me to get into the bivy. I got pretty cold. I had two pairs of socks on, and I didn't. So I know that when your feet are cold, there's, like, blood constriction, and you can't, your feet won't warm up, and they won't put off any heat. And so I ended up taking both pairs of my socks off after I got into the bivy because I was so cold. And in the bivy, it was, like, sticky, and I got sweaty, and it started getting really wet inside, and I just dealt with it. But it wasn't comfortable, and it was kind of claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like I said, it didn't take long for me to get into the bivy.
It was
pretty cold. And the second we went to bed, the wind picked up more.
Yeah. And that's just one of the things about, you know, I don't know what it is about this area or where we live, but it seems like as soon as night falls, the wind picks up. And it might have something to do with the moon or the ocean cycles or whatever it may be. Someone might have more knowledge about that than I do, but that wind picks up right around nightfall as soon as the sun goes down. And once again, it kind of destroyed our evening plan. So one of the things that was interesting about this is I'm thinking I've got a good tent, you know. I think it was probably a $200-$300 tent. I think I've got a good sleeping bag. And I'm sitting there in my sleeping bag, in my bivy, in my tent, and it feels like I'm laying inside your freezer aisle at your grocery store with about three box fans blowing toward my face. And it was kind of an interesting experience because, you know, I was ready to throw in the towel probably three or four times that night, you know, from when the fire wouldn't start to when we couldn't hardly get clean boiled water to when we couldn't hardly get a decent warm meal. And now here we are, you know, with cold air blowing in our faces, and we've got it. Our options are to either bag out, get dressed, and, you know, take the walk of shame to the front door because we couldn't hack it single night. But we did make it through, and we did survive. It wasn't fun, and it wasn't comfortable, but we did make it through. And I think we found a few more holes in our gear that we could probably make some changes to.
Literally. There was a hole in your bivy.
Yep, hole in my bivy that came about after one night. And, you know, last but not least, we wound up breaking camp and calling it a day. Lesson learned. I mean, what kind of things did you come out with?
As far as breaking camp down?
No, I mean, just the whole experience.
Well, it was good practice. That's for sure, because it's going to be pretty windy. And of course, it had to be the one night that we did our dry run, because pretty much every other day has been pretty calm. But it was quite an experience. And, you know, it'd be good to be prepared for other nights.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to get as cold and windy again. It might be, but it's good to have the practice.
Yeah. Better to train in some of the worst environments than some of the most ideal environments. And, you know, what I came out with on this was that cold feet is a lot more than mental endurance. You know, my feet were freezing too, and my head was in a weird space. I just wanted to go inside because I knew it was close, and I knew we had the ability to bag out. And what I found is that overall, when it comes to winter camping, winter survival, warmth is a game changer for your attitude and spirit, whether it's your food or your environment or your shelter, whatever it may be. Having some warmth makes a big difference. And I think probably the most critical thing in a long-term scenario would be that backups to your cook stoves and your hot meals are critical. And if you're not accustomed to eating cold soup, or granola bars or whatever it may be, you might wind up having a hard time dealing with that. So let's take one more commercial break. We'll just do one quick ad spot, and then when we get back, we will do the pint-sized prepper project of the week.
Have you visited SurvivalGearSystems.com? At SGS, we focus on and deliver today's most innovative high-tech survival gear and complete survival systems. Survival Gear Systems, the ultimate resource for individuals and families who want to get the information they need to develop their life survival plans and plan for adventures. At Survival Gear Systems, we offer not only individualized products, but also complete survival packages ranging from basic to extreme. Our survival systems include products recommended by our trained survival experts, including food, water filtration, power sources, communication devices, emergency gear, survival shelter, survival clothing, and more. These systems are revolutionary in preparing families for catastrophic events without the need to do the research or shopping around themselves. We do the work for you. Visit us and experience SurvivalGearSystems.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. And thanks again for your patience in dealing with the audio issues this time around. Hopefully, we won't have this in the near future. So now let's get into the pint-sized prepper project of the week. For those of you out there who caught the show back in June, you might remember that we mixed a few of our tents. We mixed them. We got rid of some of the tents that we had right off the bat. You know, they had broken poles or worn plastic, zippers failed. You know, some of the elastic was messed up in the tent poles. But we did save some of the components, and we decided to put them to use. So while we were out shopping for some of our winter gear for camping out, we had on our list these stuff bags, as we call them, which are basically a cinch top or clip together bag that you can cram your camping gear into and add this, you know, a layer of organization and space saving to your pack. But when we realized how expensive they were, we decided to make our own. So Colin, why don't you go ahead and explain how this works? And for those of you who are who are following us on Instagram, you can check out the photos that we have on there. And you know, I'll see what I can do to update the Facebook page with some of these images as well.
All right. So stuff bags. So some of you might not know what a stuff bag is, but Dad did a pretty good job at explaining. And some of you might think that you could just take contents that you would put in your camping bag or hiking pack and just throw them in the pockets. But we've all had a point in our life where we're going through our camping bag or hiking pack and we know where we put one particular item, we just can't quite get to it. And you end up digging through all the pockets and other parts of your bag, making a huge mess in the process. And stuff bags will help because it keeps you organized, and if you label these stuff bags with either Sharpie or iron-on patch or, you know, just a sew-on patch, then you know where all this stuff is. So now that that's pretty much cleared up, you want to round up whatever material you choose to make your stuff bags out of. Like Dad mentioned earlier, we used old tent material because we had access to it, and most people do have access to it because they can either find it at an old thrift store for a couple bucks or one that you grew out of or one that somebody you knew grew out of. And also, it's usually pretty water-resistant as well as identifiable. And just to add on to it, it's pretty easy to work with when it comes to sewing. So I would recommend that. And then after you get your desired material, you pretty much just get to the sewing of your bags. And you do this by tracing out double the length of how big you will want your bag, plus an inch or so on the top or bottom for when you fold the top down to make the drawstring mechanism. Is that what it's called?
Yeah,
it's a drawstring. Yeah. And then you cut your material that you trace and move on to putting it all together. So as far as the sewing goes, you want to fold your trace material in half, pin it, and just be mindful that in the end you're going to turn the bag right side out once you're done sewing. So when you do fold it, make sure you put the side that you want to be on the outside of your bag on the inside. And if you're working with double-sided material, you don't really have to worry about pin it and get to sewing. And really all you need to do from there is sew the sides and the bottom. And that's because you want a top, you know. So now we have the drawstring mechanism to do. And to do this, I don't really know how to explain this quite right. But, I mean, I would say that you just fold the top of the bag inward, maybe an inch or so, and then sew it. And you sew it. It's kind of an interesting process. It's not difficult. I mean, I did it, so come on.
Yeah.
it just interesting. It's a little bit difficult to put in words, so a picture might help. So go check out the Instagram book page for pictures, and you might get it a little bit better. I would strongly suggest the Instagram because it's super easy to navigate, and it's pretty straightforward with the 10 pictures that will help you with this project. But getting kind of off topic. Finally, you just want to flip your bag right side out and feed the parrot or whatever stream you're using through the lip we made in the previous step, and I apologize if I didn't really explain it all that well. So what we did from there is, or what we did to put the string through the bag was we took an old Bic type pen, no click or anything special, and we put the end of the paracord, we took apart the Bic pen, and we put the end of the paracord through the cap, and we followed that with the body of the Bic pen. And again, check out the pictures for a reference. And now that you have a little bit of structure for your paracord, you can just feed it through the lip in the bag. And then once you get the paracord string all the way, the string material all the way through your bag, then you just add a toggle and should be good to go.
Yeah, this is kind of it's a little bit of a complex project, and it requires some knowledge of sew. As a parent, you'll want to be able to know how to do this yourself, so it's worthwhile to learn if you don't already know and learn with your kids. Some of the skills learned and encouraged in this project is a friendly way to improve skill sewing. Like Colin mentioned earlier, the tent fabric is really easy to work with, and it rarely stretches or binds up, which makes this type of small project something that won't frustrate people, I guess you could say, with the act of sewing and just the basic skill set. It also exposes kids to those basic sewing skill sets and techniques and the essentials of sewing machine operation. So we actually used a treadle machine that we have here. Treadle is T-R-E-A-D-L-E, and it's basically a foot-powered sewing machine. It's not, you can use a plug-in style sewing machine, but one of the reasons we got this is because it's an attractive piece of furniture, for one. It's kind of an antique, and it still works. Doesn't require any power. You can operate it by hand, and it's kind of it's a really great backup. I've used it a lot of times on just mending clothes here and there. But for projects like these, it really makes a big difference. And learning how to operate a piece of machine like this, even something as simple as knowing how to thread the needle and make sure the thread follows the right path to the needle from the spindle, it's a kind of intricate little device, so you have to know your way around it. Finally, it exposes kids to the importance of repurposing old gear and turning it into new, purposeful gear. So, hopefully you can take this away as something that you can enjoy with you and yours. And with that, let's move to the final takeaway for this week's episode. Camping is a great experience, and it's one that's often shared during the summer months with family and friends. But weather is generally warm and welcoming, and it's a great environment to learn some basic camping skills. And some things that you may need to realize is that there's also a need for camping skills during all seasons, during all weather and all types of weather. But without taking the time to test your gear, check your bag temperature ratings or your warm weather clothing, you could be setting yourself up for failure in an actual emergency. Some of us keep sleeping bags in the trunks of our cars in cases of like blizzards or storms, getting stranded on the road or at a friend's house. But will that gear really hold up, even in an enclosed vehicle? By taking the time to pull out that old gear and really put it to the test in a controlled environment, you'll find out more about yourself and your preps than you could possibly imagine. And when it's all said and done, you can do more than just claim your preparedness skills. You can own them, and you can pass them along. Being prepared is more than just buying gear. It's living through an experience and enduring a level that those around you might shy away from. And then asking yourself, if you're not willing to do it with your kids by your side, are you truly prepared if something should happen that would cause you to be pinned down during winter weather? Finally, in case you missed it, on our last show, we talked about wintertime water procurement, where we showed some of the ways that you can keep water stores on hand during winter and ways that you can access water, natural water resources around you when the pipes freeze. Remember, if you missed out on any of our shows, you can always check out previous episodes on the show page or on your favorite streaming service. And while you're there, be sure to leave us a 5-star review. Next week, we hope to have a special guest on, so stay tuned and check out the show page for details. I'll try to get it updated by Monday or Tuesday at the latest, so stay tuned and we'll see where we go with that. I think that's it for today, everyone. Thanks for joining us on the Next Generation Show, and don't forget to tune in next Sunday, where we explore another aspect of the little things in life that make all the difference in the world. This is your host, Ryan Buford, and your co-host, Colin Buford, reminding you to stay involved, get informed, and be prepared. Thanks, everybody. Have a great night, and make it a great week.
You've just joined the Prepper Broadcasting Network, where we promote self-reliance and independence. The views and opinions expressed are strictly those of the host or their guests. Visit us in the interactive chat room at PrepperBroadcasting.com.